folks. Welcome to the Connect Halftime Show. I'm Dan Fernandez, and I'm joined by two folks who just gave some amazing demos, Amanda and Jay. Why don't you two quickly introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Amanda Silver. I'm the Director of Program Management for the Visual Studio Tools for Client Applications.
And you are?
And I'm Jay Schmelzer, and I'm the Director of Program Management for the Visual Studio Tools for Cloud Applications.
So we're seeing a ton of folks, and remember, the hashtag is VS Connect. Ton of folks interested. In fact, .NET was trending. I think it was even higher than Kim Kardashian at this point. So that almost never happened, so kudos to the team. Why don't we give, in case folks are kind of catching up, just a recap of what you showed, and we'll start with you, Amanda, since you literally just got off stage.
I literally just ran upstairs. So the first demo was basically building native applications that are tailored for each device, Windows, iOS, and Android. And what I showed is that you can use the same C# .NET code for like 80% of your application across those three different platforms.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And the iOS building was probably the other part. So what was going on there for folks who were watching?
Yeah, so one of the, the first demo was basically building tailored native applications for each of the different devices. Mm-hmm. The second demo that I did was based on Apache Cordova that used web standards technologies to build basically the same application across iOS, Android, and Windows. And so there were many different aspects of that demo. Everything from in the tailored native applications, it was really about using portable class libraries so that I can get the maximum amount of code reuse. For the Cordova application, it was really about using the same, you know, web frameworks and web programming tool chain that I'm used to, but then also using the plugins that are available for Apache Cordova to be able to access native device capabilities.
Now, and the idea is, hey, you're a developer, you kind of get to choose, you know, what you're familiar with and use the tool set that, again, you get to use Visual Studio for that. Is that kind of the idea? It's like, hey, if you're doing Cordova applications, we now have Cordova support. And the point is you can now do it cross-platform. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I think there are a number of things that would lead people to choose one technology versus another. I think with, you know, building with Xamarin and C#, one of the things that you can do is you can really target the native capabilities. Absolutely anything that you could do with, you know, Android Studio or with Xcode, you can actually do with Visual Studio with Xamarin.
Awesome. Yeah. And when would somebody choose some of the Cordova tools?
So in that case, you know, it might be the developer's background, as you brought up earlier. So if you have a team that's really familiar with web programming, that's going to be kind of more comfortable to them. But another reason might be that you actually want to have, you don't want to have a tailored experience for each of the different device form factors. You actually intentionally want to have exactly the same experience across the three different form factors.
Yeah, I think the other thing is a lot of developers that they start as web developers and they were building mobile websites, and it's just a lot easier path for them to start targeting mobile device applications or native applications with Cordova.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's you're getting the same feedback from customers.
Yeah, we're definitely hearing that.
Okay, so now on to, we talked about client, and really this is like the cross-platform Connect event, because Jay, you showed some stuff, and I don't want to steal your thunder, so I'll let you talk about what you showed.
Sure, so what we showed was a really early look at how we could enhance the Visual Studio experience for developers while capitalizing on this new cross-plat.net effort that we're doing. So what I showed was building an ASP.NET 5 application and deploying it to a Docker container image running on Linux, all in Azure, right? And of course, it's Visual Studio, so we had to debug it remotely too and do the whole, you know, red to green thing and that kind of stuff, so.
And the open sourcing, what does it actually mean? Because people are asking, are you open sourcing all the .NET framework? Because there was talk of .NET Core. Can you kind of break it down for us exactly what's being open sourced?
Sure, so what we're focusing on is what we're referring to as the .NET Core runtime. So specifically today, the first thing you'll see is we have a new project in GitHub CoreFX, which is a set of class libraries, specifically Immutable Collection, XML, SIMD, the new SIMD library, and a couple others. And that's where we're going to be creating these libraries, putting them out there in a way that they're buildable, they're open for contribution, and you'll see us over the next weeks and months just continue adding the core libraries to that, that project. We're also creating a new project that will be referred to as the Core Runtime Project, which will take the actual runtime layers, so the CLR, the JIT, the GC, all that you need for running these cloud server applications, and we'll be open sourcing all of that as well. There hasn't been any code written for that cross-platform yet, so we're starting from the beginning open with engaging with the community, hoping to get engaged in design, as well as code contributions from the start.
You know, you showed actually running on a Docker container on Linux. So what was the runtime that was executing there?
Yep. So in that case, obviously the Mono project has been around for quite a while, and they've made a lot of investments in cross-plat .NET support. So we kind of bootstrapped that demo by using Mono as the runtime layer, and then ASP.NET 5 sitting on top of it to deploy and run in that Linux environment.
So does this mean, like, are we saying, stating, if you will, that for server we are a kind of officially supporting some version of framework and runtime? Is there, like, something, because we've kind of had an interesting relationship with Mono where we haven't said, like, hey, it's Visual Studio doesn't say, you know, officially support in our support clause. Like,
yes.
What does that actually mean for customers that are making the decision?
Great question. So actually the way Scott put it this morning, right, in his keynote was that we will have Microsoft-supported distributions of the .NET runtime for Windows, Linux, and the Mac operating system. Obviously, the real focus for Windows and Linux is around deployed environments, and the Mac operating system is for that developer experience. If you're working on a Mac and want to build an ASP.NET 5 application and deploy it anywhere, we want to make sure that works for you as well. So this will be a new project.
Okay.
We're engaged from the beginning with the Mono community, been exchanging text with Miguel kind of all night about exactly the details here and how this is working.
No, this is awesome. No, this is awesome.
Yeah, and so I kind of expect,
I really expect
the first kind of non-Microsoft contribution is going to come from the Mono project. They've got a bunch of areas where they've got some really great implementations that we're hoping they're going to just bring to this effort.
And now one of the things that I had seen some questions on Twitter was, is this going to be the full framework, or is this kind of the beginning? Can you kind of address that question?
Yeah, so the way we think about it is we have the what we typically refer to as the full framework, which is the big package that you install today. You know, a version ships with Windows, and when you update the entire machine. It's a system-wide installation. The core runtime is designed and implemented to be completely side-by-side within an application process. And then composable, so it's all basically NuGet libraries that come in. So you distribute the exact version of the runtime up through the libraries that you want for your application. Another application comes on the machine, they have exactly what they wanted, and you can't kind of affect each other. So we think about it as a more optimized view of the stack. We have one for the cloud, and of course, with the native compilation, client native compilation we've done for Windows Store apps, we have the same kind of path headed for the client as well.
Okay, yeah, because I think that was one of the questions where people are saying, and this comes back to some of the client applications, do we see sort of like this ebb and flow of open sourcing more client technology stacks like WPF, like Store Apps, that kind of thing? And, Amanda, I'm going to put you on the hot seat to answer.
I certainly think that yes, there is a trend towards open sourcing more and more of the stack. I think with respect to WPF, we have nothing to announce today, but we've certainly heard that in the past. So this is a good first step.
And I'll jump in. I mean, look, I think the key is that we want to make sure that when we open source these things, we're doing it in a way that it's an active project that the community can be successful engaging in and successful contributing to. With things that are in that full stack, because it's a machine-wide stack, there's a lot of work to be done to ensure that, you know, if we put WPF out there, for example, and Dan comes in and makes a request or just builds your own, you just affected every WPF app on the machines you send that to. And we take the compatibility layer there pretty seriously. So if we were going to go do something like that, we would need to make sure that the community is set up to be successful with it. And that's...
I think the other interesting part was there were a number of comments on Twitter on the WPF roadmap, and we just published WPF roadmap. There was, to take somebody's quote, I think it was, "It's not dead yet," I think was the thing. Can either of you comment on some of our investments for WPF and client application development?
Sure, I can certainly take that. So one of the things that was actually very intentional, the third demoer from Soma's session here was basically showing off all of the new capabilities of Visual Studio, but in the context of building a WPF application. Mm-hmm. So insofar as anything that we add to Visual Studio, we also want to make sure that that's available to WPF developers as well. And that even goes for our new XAML tools. So one of the things that was covered in the WPF roadmap, and actually that Daniel showed today, is that we have a brand new set of tools coming for XAML. And one of the examples that was covered in the WPF roadmap is a timeline tool that allows you to understand what's happening from a performance perspective with respect to your WPF application.
So it's kind of the performance diagnostics tooling. Doesn't matter what XAML target, if you will, it'll, quote, just work?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, that's just the tooling so far. Okay. But we also are looking at platform investments as well. And so there are a couple things that we outlined in the roadmap. One is general performance improvements. You know, WPF is used by so many different industries, and not a day goes by when I don't hear about a brand new WPF mission-critical application that is basically being deployed today, or it's going to be deployed in 2 weeks, or, you know, it's really, really active, and people continue to build WPF applications, which is fantastic. But as they build mission-critical applications, they also tend to kind of, you know, need to be able to see a lot on the screen. If you think about something like a screen like this, this is actually a pretty large screen, and I mm-hmm. could potentially see a lot of information on that screen. And so in that case, we see that WPF applications actually need to scale up, in some cases, to hundreds of thousands of rows or, you know, grids or other things like that. And so performance is one of the most critical things that we've heard feedback on that we really want to kind of respond to. The other thing that we're looking at is DirectX interop. So that's another thing that we're going to look at.
That's super exciting. So what exactly does that mean for folks who are maybe want to take advantage of DirectX, but it's a tough hill to climb, and the two technologies don't fit like Legos?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there's, as Jay mentioned, like when we think about WPF, WPF is a kind of shared framework that is installed once per machine, mm-hmm. and so, like, if you have multiple WPF applications out there, and you probably do have multiple WPF applications that are running on your desktop.
I do.
You want to make sure that as one application gets updated, it doesn't impact the other application running on your machine.
Right.
And as the developer of that application, you also don't want to compromise somebody else's app. That's just not being good. So we have to make sure that whatever we do here absolutely retains the best compatibility for WPF applications running on the machine. But at the same time, we also hear from customers that what they really want is they want to have a WPF surface, but they also want to be able to take advantage of new capabilities that are coming in new editions of DirectX, like DirectX 11, to be able to get rich, you know, visual diagnostics for their application. And so one of the areas that we're looking at is better interop.
Okay. Just one of the quick questions, because you mentioned some of the timeline tools. Are these tooling, is it specific to Visual Studio 2015, or can I start playing with this with, say, for example, the 2013 Community Edition, or what version?
So 2013 actually included, in some of the most recent updates, we actually shipped some new tools for XAML, including WPF. In the update 3 and update 2, there was new functionality.
So before
that shipped
this event,
there.
Correct?
Yeah. For the new tools that we talked about today and what Daniel showed in his demo, that's going to be based in 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So it looks like we're out of time. Thank you both, Jay, Amanda, for your questions. See, this was painful. Yes. They were worried. Thank you all. And remember, we're going to be here afterwards with questions with the executives, but we're going to take you now to Scott Hanselman, who will be doing our next keynote. Thanks.